Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on counterfeit coin detection when we come back. You know, many of the lessons that you hear on this Law Hour program are just a small part of our two-week basic school on courtroom strategy and procedure, and this class includes lessons that range from what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you receive a complaint, a summons, or a citation. And you'll learn how to make a chronology of the names, dates, times, places, the facts, the witnesses, the evidence, just like the police do. And you'll learn how to conduct a hearing, present evidence, cross-examine witnesses, ask questions, make opening and closing statements, enter exhibits into evidence, and write motions, briefs, and affidavits. And I don't cover just what goes on in the courtroom either. You'll learn preliminary procedures, such as arraignments and bail setting, and what papers to file, and how to put exculpatory evidence into the record, and how to present your legal and lawful positions, what issues are appealable, and how to preserve those appealable issues for appellate review. Now, there are 28 essential elements to master in courtroom strategy and procedure, and you'll learn all of them here at the law school. For more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, just call us and ask. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And while you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, that's free. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Why don't you do it right now before you forget? Counterfeit coin detection. It's not very likely that you're going to run into a counterfeit coin. It's more likely you're going to run into a counterfeit $100 bill. But counterfeit coins are big business, and oftentimes people will call me here at the law school and they'll want to trade a $4,000 coin or a $10,000 coin. And they will tell me, well, I paid $10,000 for this 1885S MS65 $5 or $10 gold piece or something like that. And I say, well, that may well be true. Maybe you did pay $10,000 for it, but that doesn't mean that it's worth $10,000. And furthermore, we don't even know that the coin that you bought is genuine. It may be a counterfeit. And when people hear that, they're absolutely dumbfounded. They're shocked. They look at me or they think to themselves, this guy Gordon is some kind of a shyster. He's trying to steal from me. He's going to cheat me. And the cheating has already occurred. When you bought the coin and paid that $10,000 for it, that's when the theft, that's when the cheating occurred way, way back at the time you purchased the coin, not when you go to resell it. So there's two aspects to this thing of the counterfeit coin detection. Number one, counterfeit coins are an unavoidable reality in the numismatic marketplace, and particularly with ancient coins, though with modern coins as well. And learning the diagnostics of coin forgeries as well as the characteristics of authentic coins, buying from reputable dealers and avoiding sellers who don't know who create private eBay auctions, avoiding sellers in any venue with a no return policy claiming that they're selling coins from an estate, or buying smart in general, can minimize your exposure to counterfeit coins. The study of counterfeits along with protecting you can also be an interesting hobby in and of itself. So the first thing we need to be concerned about here is Maybe you do have a $10,000 coin. There are some of them out there. For instance, an 1895 Philadelphia Morgan silver dollar is a $12,000 coin. They only made 12,000 of them that year. Now, for a person who collects these numismatic coins, there's a marketplace out there for that 1895 coin. Now, I'm a coin collector, and I've been collecting coins all my life, and it's a fun hobby. It's not something that you make money at. It's like burning airplane gas. You get in the airplane, and you go out, and you have a good time. You come back, and you fill it up, and you pay the guy $200 to fill your tank, and you say, well, okay, but I had a lot of fun today. I enjoyed myself. Now, if you thought that you were going to buy an airplane and make money, I think that you made a mistake. If you're buying coins thinking that you're going to make money on these coins, I think that's a mistake. There are some coins that you're going to buy to make money on or to preserve your wealth, and those are called bullion coins. Those are coins that you buy for the gold content of the coin, but people that buy numismatic coins and get involved in these counterfeit coins are people who are buying a 1916D dime. And they intend to make a profit off of that dime in the numismatic field. Let me give you an illustration here. The 1916D Mercury dime, they only made 264,000 of them that year. One of those dimes today in G4 condition, that's the lowest condition you can buy it in. I mean, you can just barely read the date in the mint mark, and it sells for $800. Now, that's a lot of bread to pay for a dime. Just picture this. How much does a dime buy down at Walmart? Because that's what a 1916D dime is worth, according to Title 31, Section 5102 of the U.S. Code. It has a value established by Congress, and it's 10 cents. That's all. So if I come along and I say, well, yeah, I'll pay you $800 for that dime, it's because I've got a book, and in my book it's got little holes punched in it. And I put a dime in each one of those holes, like 1931 and 1942 and 1926. I'm putting those dimes in those holes to make a collection. And it's fun, and it's satisfying, and I like to do it, and there's millions of people like me that do that. And then, once in a while, we get caught up, like one of my customers here not too long ago. He had a bunch of $1 and $2.50 and $5 gold pieces that he had bought, and they were numismatic coins about EF40 grade, and he wanted to trade them to me, and so I looked at them, and I said, well, here's what they're worth. And he was kind of shocked because he had paid quite a bit more than that for them. So the first thing that you should recognize is that when you buy a numismatic coin, you're going to pay 25% more than the gold content in the coin. That's just coming right out of the chute. You're going to pay about 25% more. Now, you can buy gold bullion coins for about 4% over the spot price from a dealer. Maybe 6, 7, 8% over the spot price from a coin dealer. So 8% is not a very good buy, but 4% is a reasonable buy. And if you buy enough of them, you can get the premium, the commission that you pay, down to about 2.5% or 3%. So if you were going to buy $100,000 worth of bullion coins, and let's say the price of gold is $700 an ounce, you're going to pay $700 plus about 3% or $21 over that to pay the dealer or the broker for handling the transaction for you. And you're going to receive the maximum amount of gold weight that you can get. So tuck it away in your heart, write it in your notes. These are called bullion coins. That's the best buy you can make. About 2.5% to 3%, $100,000 transaction, bullion coins, that's about the best you're going to do. Now, if you're going to buy less than that, you know, you're going to buy $5,000 or $10,000 worth, well, then the premium goes up. Maybe it's 3.5% or 4%. That's not an unreasonable premium. But if you're only going to buy one or two coins, well, a broker has a minimum. I have a broker that I deal with, and his minimum is $5,000. So if you want to buy one or two coins or $1,000 or $2,000 or $3,000, you got to go to a coin dealer. Now, he's got to make a little bit more because it takes more time, effort, and energy to deal with lesser amounts. So he wants 7 or 8%. That's not an unreasonable price to pay. It's the cost of doing business. The man that's selling you a car, you know, he's not selling you the car for what he paid for it. He's selling you the car at what he paid for it plus his profit, plus his commission, plus. That's just a common business practice, no big deal there. But when you're buying numismatic coins, you're paying 25% over the original value of the coin. So, for instance, as I'm looking in my 2006 Red Book, a guidebook of United States coins, just to give you an illustration here, they're going to charge me $800 for this 10-cent piece if it's dated 1916D, and I'm going to pay $800 for that 10-cent coin, and I'm going to put that into my coin collection, and I'm going to put it over there. And then someday, if I ever want to sell my coin collection, and I go to sell that, do you know they're only going to give me $600 for that dime that I paid $800 for? That's right. So I'm going to take a 25% hit. The dealer that deals in that coin is going to charge me 25% more than he paid for the coin when he sells it to me. And then when he buys it back from me, he's going to give me 25% less than I paid for it. So let's think about it. He buys the coin for $600 and sells it to me for $8. Then I turn around and sell the coin back to him for $600, and he turns around and sells it to somebody else for $8. And so that's the normal markup in numismatic coins. So let's understand that going into the game. So when you call me and you tell me, gee, I've got this $10,000 coin, well, the truth of the matter is it's only worth about, $7,500 at best. So, tuck that one away in your heart. Now you get down to the counterfeit coin problem. How do I know that this 1885S MS65 coin or whatever it is that you're selling me is really the real thing? Well, there's a methodology for making that determination. So perhaps the most frequently asked question of collectors of ancient coins are asked by non-collectors as well is, how do you know whether or not it's real? The disconcerting answer sometimes is you don't, not with all coins and not with certainty. The fact is that significant numbers of counterfeit ancient coins are sold as authentic coins. Now, you heard this guy Mel Fisher, and he found a ship out in the Gulf of Mexico or the Straits of Florida or someplace called the Atocha, and they found a big hoard of gold coins. Well, the other day, I bought a ring. It was a gold ring. And it was a replica of a ring that came off of the Mel Fisher Atocha shipwreck. It's not an original ring. And when the guy sold it to me, he said, now this is not the ring, but it is a copy of a ring. Okay. So I didn't get cheated because I bought a copy of the ring. It's real gold and it's very, very nice looking ring. What if a guy came to me and he said, this ring came off of the Atocha. This is the original ring. Well, the original ring is probably sitting in a museum someplace. And that ring is probably worth 10, 20, 50 times more than these copy or reproductions of. And everybody can understand that, can't you? All right, now, off of this same shipwreck, there are a lot of ancient coins that came off of there. Now, those coins, you know, are not out in general circulation. It isn't something you're going to get and change down at Walmart. And so people, you know, not only is there gold content in the coin itself, it could be a one-inch, Spanish piece of eight or gold doubloon or something like that. And guys like me come along and go, wow, look at that coin. And maybe the coin weighs an ounce. So its spot value, just the weight of the gold in the coin, is worth $700. But in addition to that, it came off of this famous shipwreck. You know, if you've ever watched the TV show on PBS, called Antiques Roadshow. you know, there's some pretty surprising values that come out of those antiques, you know. And so you get one of these original coins off of the Fisher Wreck, you know, or the Fisher Expedition, you know. That coin's got history, it's got antique value, it's got gold value. And it's also got numismatic value. How many of those coins were minted back in 1720, you know, when those coins were minted? And then you got a, you know, you got another value there. And so these coins are worth counterfeiting. In fact, over in Lebanon, they were counterfeiting American rare coins. And the way they discovered that the coins were counterfeit is because the quality of the coins was better than the original quality of the coins that were originally minted back in the 1870s and 80s when these coins were first minted. Now, that's a good coin. When you've got a coin that is so good, that is stamped, I mean, they've got they've made their own dies. They just took a coin and they made the die, and they stamped these coins out. And then they go out into the marketplace and sell them. Just picture this. Let's suppose that somebody takes this ring like I'm describing to you, and they go out and they make 1,000 copies of this ring, but they go to the customer, somebody like me, and say, this is the ring, it came off of the Atocha, and the price is $10,000. So I pay $10,000 for this reproduction that has, you know, some value to it. It's real gold. But it's not $10,000, it's maybe $1,000. And that's what they do with these counterfeit coins. Now, I'm sitting here at my desk, and I'm looking at a coin here that's in a little plastic container. And what it is, it's the American Buffalo 2006 $50 gold piece. And it's in this plastic container because it's an MS69. Now, that's about the highest grade you can get. There's an MS70, but they graded this at MS69. And it's put out by the PCGS. And there are three or four of these grading services, and it's sealed in a plastic container. And if I break in here and I open this plastic container, this coin is no longer an MS69. It doesn't pass across the counter as an MS69. And the price of this coin was $90 more than the gold content of it. So when I bought this coin, I paid $90 more than I would have had to have paid for it had I just bought the coin in a tube open, ungraded. Now, for somebody that's looking for an MS69 Buffalo, I've got it. Or, like in my case, somebody that wants an MS69, I've got it. But this isn't something that the average Joe Sixpack ought to be buying. That's the point I'm trying to make. I know it's not a counterfeit because it's an original coin and it's been graded by a recognized institution. And I can pass this coin back and forth as a numismatic collector to other collectors, and we all know that this coin has been authenticated and that it's a real, genuine American coin. But can you imagine the profit that you could make if you just went out and started making these in Lebanon or Syria or someplace in the Middle East where these things generally are made, and then brought it to the United States and then sold it as the original? It's got all the gold content, but it's not an MS69, it's a counterfeit. And that's what I want to warn you about, because a lot of times you people, you know, you come in here to the law school and you say, here's this coin, here's what I paid for it. And I don't doubt that you paid that for it. And I remember a fellow came in here one time with a couple of gold nuggets, nice looking gold nuggets. Probably weighed about, oh, I'm going to say 3 ounces between the two of them. And so, you know, I deal in gold a little bit from time to time, and so I pulled out my 10-power loop, and I looked at these two gold nuggets under my loop, and I concluded just by looking at them that they were counterfeits. They were not real gold nuggets. That they were, in fact, probably brass, and that they had been melted and then dropped through the air into a bucket of water, and then they had solidified, and then I took a look at them. And so I said to the man, I said, well, where'd you get these? And he said, well, my dad got those during World War II, and a traveling salesman sold them to him, or something on that order. And so my dad died, and then I got them out of the estate. And I said to this fellow, his name was Joe, and I said, well, Joe, I'm not sure that these are real gold, But I've got a way to test them, and we test them in nitric acid. And I've got a little acid here in my office. Let's put them in a bowl, and let's put a little nitric acid in there and test them. And he said, okay. So I put the nitric acid in there, and it started to froth and boil. So I dumped the acid out, and I washed them off, and they had shrunk in size by about 10%. And I said, well, the bad news is that these aren't gold. And he said, well, what are they? I said, well, I don't know what they are. I'm not a metallurgist, but I know what they aren't, and they're not gold. I said, they're probably brass. And then I described to him one of the common techniques for counterfeiting gold coins, or gold nuggets, is by using brazing rod and just melting the stuff off, you know, into a glob. And then it looks like it's natural, you know. But, you know, people that deal in nuggets, you know, a gold miner, take a look at those nuggets, and he'd look at that and he'd say, well, there's nothing out in nature that looks like that. And so it's a counterfeit, and it's designed to steal your money. And then you know, Joe's dad probably paid this guy, you know, $50 for these two gold coins, two gold nuggets. And then years and years later, we find out that, well, they're just brass, and so he got taken. And this happens with coins. Now, not too long ago, a fella called me, and he wanted to make a transaction with me, and so he wanted to pay me with numismatic coins. And they were graded at EF40. So I looked at them, and I wasn't sure that they were EF40, so I took all the coins, and I painstakingly went through each one of them. There was 90 coins total. And I graded them all. Two of the coins were VF20s. That's a very common thing. You buy a tube of coins from a coin dealer, and you're paying, let's say, $225 a coin. And maybe this is an EF40. It's not a high grade, but it's not a low grade either. It's kind of mid grade. And it's this EF40 grade over here is fair to middle and good. But he slips in a couple of VF20s. Now, let me show you the difference between an EF40 and a VF20. Looking at the 16D dime, a VF20 is $3,000 and an EF40 is $4,000. That's 25% on just the grade alone. And you have to be somewhat of an expert. I shouldn't say an expert, because I can grade coins and I don't claim to be an expert. But I can pick up my loupe, and then I can look at a guidebook, and I can look at the wear patterns on a coin, and I can tell you whether it's a VF20 or an EF40 or an AU50 or an MS60. I can do that by looking at the guide. Now, the average guy can't do that. And so you're depending upon what somebody tells you this coin is worth, and they will oftentimes, in a tube of 30, 40, 50 coins, they will slip in one or two lesser grade coins, almost invariably. Now, that's a theft. When somebody sells you an EF40 coin, it should grade EF40. And if you're paying the retail price, you should get the full value for your money. But I want to warn you all in advance that when you're buying a coin, and when you're buying more than one coin, 10, 15, 20 coins, they're almost always going to slip that in. So as a collector myself, when somebody wants to sell me 30 coins, I know that I have to sit down at my desk and take an hour or 2 hours and painstakingly go through and grade each coin. Otherwise, I'm going to lose about 25% of the value of each coin. So I went through and I graded them, and sure enough, about each group of 30 had one or two. Now, actually, he didn't get taken too bad. There were only two out of 90 coins. There were only two VF20s. All of them were, in fact, EF40s. So, you know, you could say, well, that's all in the eye of the beholder. Well, maybe it is. But I want to warn you, watch out for that. Now we get down to the more blatant thefts here. Counterfeit coin detection, particularly with ancient coins, is as much an art as it is a science. And that's because they were struck by hand, and because of the wide variability of their designs, even the best experts are sometimes fooled. Some of the most prestigious dealers in the world have bought large numbers of counterfeit ancient coins as authentic coins at the 1999 and 1988 New York International Numismatic Conventions, which were only later discovered to be coin forgeries. Many dealers contacted buyers and refunded their money. But many of these fake coins remain on the market to this day. So if somebody's got an ancient coin that comes off of the Atocha or comes out of a Roman archaeological dig or something like that, there's a way that you can tell whether or not the coin is genuine or counterfeit. There are several of these companies, such as the PCGS company. And if I was going to buy a coin like that, I'd say, okay, let me take the coin in and have it graded. And you send the coin off by certified mail. I mean, we're talking $10,000, $15,000 here in all probability. So you insure the coin for the $10,000 or $15,000. You send it to the PCGS company, and they'll grade that coin for you. They will authenticate it, and they will seal it in a plastic container like I have here in my hand. And it'll come back in the plastic container, and it'll say, and you have to pay them. I mean, they're not doing this free, you know. And you pay them $90, and they'll grade it, authenticate it, put it in a plastic tube, send it back to you. And then you've got something here in your hand that says, yes, it's been graded and authenticated. When you're buying these coins loose, and they're of lesser quality, or you're trying to authenticate a coin, and it's something less than that, hey, you're on your own. Maybe it's real, maybe it isn't. So don't think that I'm trying to cheat you, you know, when you say to me, well, I've got this coin and here's what I paid for it. I'm sure you did. I'm sure you paid every dime that you're claiming. But I just wanted to tell you that that doesn't mean that the coin that you have or the gold nugget that you have is genuine or that it's real or that it's worth as much as you thought it was worth. Now, I had another young fella come in here and he bought an 1885S, an MS63, I believe it is. 1885, I think it's a $5 gold piece, as I recall, and the book here says it's worth $800. And that's what he paid for it. He paid $800. Now, I looked at it. Now, it's what we call a common grade, a common date, not a common grade, but a common date. 1885 $5 gold pieces from the San Francisco Mint are about as common as pig tracks. There's nothing special about them. And I looked at the coin itself. It's not been graded, and it's not in a plastic container. And I looked at it, and I said, well, I don't think this is an MS-63, number one. I'm not sure that they could even make an MS-63 in 1885, and it's a common date. And maybe it is an MS-63, but how do we know that it's even a genuine and it's not a counterfeit? Hell, they might have been stamping those out of Lebanon, you know. It's a common date. And so, again, before I would pay $800 for that coin, you know, I think I would send it off and pay $90 and have it authenticated. But, you know, $90 against $800, you know, is 1/8 of the value of the coin to have it authenticated. Another thing you can do, you can take it into your local coin store, coin dealer, and he'll take a look at it through his loop. And remember, he's an expert. He does this for a living. He does this every day. He can be fooled, but it's not very likely. You know, it isn't impossible. As I just showed you here at a big show in 1999 and 1988 at the New York International Numismatic Convention, where this is a convention of experts, for crying out loud. And these experts bought a bunch of coins that were phony. So don't think for a minute now that counterfeit coins aren't pretty common. But it's in a field where only experts deal. Only people like me deal in those kind of coins. And those of us that deal in them are pretty cautious and careful people. I can be cheated. You know, I won't say that I haven't been, but not that I know of. You know, I try to protect myself. So when I look at you lay people out there calling me on the telephone and saying, hey, I've got this or that and something else, you know, I kind of cringe a little bit and I say, well, I'm not really sure you've got those. Now, there's some pretty high-powered people that are selling these numismatic coins. And I want to tell you right now that if it were me and I was telling you, you know, if you came into my office and you said, well, Mr. Gordon, do you think I should buy numismatic coins? I would say no, absolutely not. You should not buy numismatic coins. It's a field for experts. It's a field for people that have lots of money and have nothing better in life to do than to throw it away or burn it up like airplane gas. People that go out and buy a 1916 D dime and pay $800 for a 10-cent piece haven't got any sense. And that's just where reality's at. Now, for people like me that don't have any sense, and we're out here spending that kind of money to buy those kind of coins to put into these books over here, we know, or we should know, that we're buying an awful lot of blue sky in the process, and that the chances of us ever getting our $800 back are slim and none, and that we're buying this just for the sheer pleasure and enjoyment of spending money and buying a particular coin. It has nothing to do with economics, common sense, or reason, or logic. It's just a lark. It's just something that we do. It's a hobby. It's something that's fun. We enjoy. But it's not for money. All right. Now, with that said, there is a lot to be said for just weights and balances. And this coin that I'm holding here that I described, the 2006 PCGS MS69 American Buffalo, is a bad buy. And anybody that would buy this in the container as an MS69, it's as common as pig tracks. There's no numismatic value to this coin whatsoever. None. But it is an MS69, and it is graded, and the guy that bought it paid a $90 premium. And I could think of a lot of things that you could buy for that $90. I mean, you can buy these coins in tubes for $90 less, which is what I recommend. That's what I do. When I want to buy gold, and I want to hold gold, I buy gold coins in tubes, new. They come in plastic containers, you know, to keep from scarring them up and mutilating them. And you save $90. Now, that $90 will buy you 100 pounds of pinto beans. And I think that probably the pinto beans will do you better in the long run than the gold coin will, if you want my personal opinion. All right, now, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that also can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417 273 4967. All right, we're talking about counterfeit coins. And while I'm at it, I thought I'd throw in a little piece here. Not on counterfeit. You can be buying genuine numismatic coins, but you're paying this god-awful premium. And I use the term god-awful premium because I think 25% is a god-awful premium to pay for a 10-cent piece. But then, you know, there's those of us out here that do that. Now, I'm going to give you the source of the information here. This comes from www.scvhistory.com. So, it's called Counterfeits, Buyer Beware. That, again, is www.scvhistory.com. That's all one word, scvhistory.com. And then the other one here is rg.ancients.info. That's rg.ancients, A-N-C-I-E-N-T-S, dot I-N-F-O. That's all one word. rg.ancients.info. And that's a 20-page report. Now, for people like me, and I'm going to use me, and other numismatic collectors, we need to be up to date and knowledgeable about counterfeits because, after all, if I'm going to buy, sell, and trade, or I'm going to do business in these coins, then I got to know from time to time, you know, who's trying to pull a fast one on me. Now, here's a couple of interesting observations. Listen to this. A collector recently showed me a coin album that he had when he was a boy, about 35 years ago, and he said that he had found most of the coins in change, but he did buy the 1909S VDB and the 1914D. Well, I examined both coins and reported the sad truth that both were altered. A mint mark had been added to the 1909S VDB, and the 1914D was obviously made from a 1944D cent. Now, the owner could not recall how he acquired the 2 cents, but he did remember buying them from someone, probably another young collector at the time, back in the 1960s and the 1970s. All right, now here's a pretty common phenomenon that we see. People, especially jewelers, or people that have access to jeweler's equipment, they've got the loops, they've got the visor, and they've got the little drills and the little grinders, and they can actually grind off. You know, they take a 1944 and they simply grind off all of the four except the bar that comes down through the middle. So here's a 1944 Lincoln penny, and it's a D. It's a 1914 D is what we're after. That's the valuable coin. And we want to make this 1914D coin. And so they simply take the four and they grind it off. And then they end up with a 1914. Now, the way you tell that it's a counterfeit is you look down here at the bottom of Lincoln's bust and there's going to be a VDB. Well, on a genuine 1914D cent, there would be no trace of the designer's initials because VDB at the truncation of Lincoln's bust was not on the 1914. So if the initials are there, then it's probably an altered 1944D cent. All right, so now I know that, and now you know that. So if somebody wants to sell you this 1914D penny, and I'm just looking this up, here's a 14D, and it's worth $125 in G4 condition, $175 VG8, and it probably 1944 is a pretty common one to make. So an EF40 would be pretty common. And an EF40 is worth $575. So they could come up with, you know, a $575 coin in about probably 15 minutes work, you know, if you were a skilled jeweler. And jewelers now are pretty skilled people. And they've got the tools, you know, for grinding and buffing and making jewelry and one thing and another, and it's no big deal. Here was another counterfeit I'll warn you about. They used to take the old South African Kruger in, and they'd set it up in a vise, and they would drill holes all the way around it. Just little small holes. I mean, a coin, you know, drilling on the edge of it isn't very big. I mean, it's pretty narrow. And they'd put it in a vise, and they'd put it in a drill press, and they'd drill out, you know, 15, 20, 25 holes. And then they would fill the holes in with lead, and then they would fill the top of the hole in with gold, and then they would put the reeded edge back on it. Now, how are you going to tell that this coin, which is a genuine South African Krugerrand, maybe it's a 1979 South African Krugerrand, how are you going to tell? It's the exact right size. It looks good in every respect. But inside of it, maybe 25% of this coin is lead and 75% of it's gold. They've taken about 25% of the gold out of it by drilling it. Isn't that a novel way to steal? Well, there's a way to do that, and gold and lead have different weights. So by the time you take 25% of the gold out of this coin and replace it with 25% lead, now the coin weighs more than it's supposed to weigh. So if you put it on a little scale and you weigh it and the coin weighs more than it's supposed to weigh, then right away you know that, hey, wait a minute. I don't know what's wrong with the coin, but I know that the coin's bad. Now, the South African government, when these coins were detected, voluntarily bought all of those gold coins that were counterfeit and gave you 100 cents on the dollar for this coin, even though you lost 25% of the gold content of the coin. They did that to maintain the reputation of the South African Krugerrand. And it was a good move on their part, and there's probably a lot of those South African Krugerrands that are out there today circulating among people, buying, selling, and trading today that are as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note, and they're trading in the marketplace as if they were 100% gold to this day. And I might have had some of those come through my fingers and didn't know it. But if it's ever detected, you know, you're sitting here with this counterfeit coin. That's the bottom line. Now, what are you going to do with the counterfeit coin? Pass it on to somebody else and perpetuate the theft, or are you going to take the lump? Now, the correct answer is you're supposed to take the lump, and that's what I would do. I wouldn't pass on a coin to somebody that I knew was a counterfeit. But by the same token, I'm going to make pretty darn sure that the coin that you give me isn't a counterfeit. So if it comes down to, and you've got some rare coins and you want to trade them to me for some reason, and you want to trade for a school or something, you know, well, terrific. But when you send me the coin, you make sure that you send the coin registered mail so that when it gets here on this end, I have to sign for it. And then I'm going to take it in and I'm going to have it authenticated if it's a rare coin. And then if it's, then from that point on, once we know that the coin is real, you know, it's authentic, well, then we can start negotiating the price. You know, well, now how much do you want for this coin? You know, what do I have to give you to get it? But I want you to be aware of the fact that just because you've got some of these coins over here, that doesn't mean that the coin is necessarily genuine. It doesn't mean that it's a phony. Probably 99% of the coins are 90%. I don't know what the numbers are, but, you know, there are genuine coins. The only coins that are going to be counterfeited, nobody's going to counterfeit a 1916D G4. But there's been a lot of 1916D dimes that have been counterfeited. In fact, there's guys that have made the actual dies and stamped out brand new 1916D dimes out of their own mint right there at their own location. And then, naturally, they're going to try to sell that coin, you know, as an MS-60, uncirculated coin. And they're going to be looking for many, many thousands of dollars, you know, like a $10,000 bill. Well, before you spend a $10,000 bill believing that this is a genuine coin, you make sure that thing has been graded. It's certainly worth $90 to have a $10,000 coin graded, in my view, anyway. Here's another one, an 1877 Indian head penny. Well, the 73 is also a rare one. So the 73 has an open 3. And there's a 73 doubled Liberty, which in, you know, pretty good condition here, you know, is worth $2,200 here with an EF-40. The 1877 is a pretty valuable coin. Just G4 is $575. By the time you get up to VF-20, it's $1,400. An AU-50, it's circulated, but, you know, just barely is $2,400. Now, that's the full-bore retail price. Now, those coins can be counterfeited. And they can be stamped out. You know, some guy, you know, that goes over to China, I'll bet you those Chinese are over there stamping out coins right now. They counterfeit everything else. Why shouldn't they counterfeit numismatic coins? Now, I'm not the expert of the experts. But when I get a coin that's graded by PCGS and then later on it turns out to be a counterfeit, I can come back against PCGS and say, wait a minute, you graded that, I paid you to grade it, and you graded a counterfeit, and I want you to cover that. And they'll do that. They'll cover that. They'll buy it back. Any reputable dealer that you want to buy from, for instance, if I want to buy a coin like a 16D or a 77 Indian, I would go to my coin dealer and say, Charlie, I'm in the market for a 16D, go find me one. And then he'll come back and he'll say, hey, Gordon, I've got one, and it's an EF-40, and here's the price on it. And I'd say, well, that's a little pricey, here's my offer. If the guy wants to sell it, that's a cash transaction. And he'll come back and say, okay, the guy says he'll take it. All right, now we got a deal. I remember one time I had a 1794 flowing hair 50 cent piece. And the guy that had it, you know, these are kind of rare coins. I mean, they're not super rare, but they're pretty rare. And in the lower grades, you know, they're worth several hundred bucks. And so I said, well, here's what I'll pay for that. He said, okay, well, I'll take it. Well, I had that coin for many years. And then ultimately it was stolen from me, but the moral to the story was that while I had it, I had a genuine coin, and I paid a reasonable price for it. And had it not been stolen, I probably would have sold it and maybe even made a little money on it. After all, that's what a coin dealer does for a living. He buys and sells coins. He goes to estate sales and he buys coins. And then he comes back and he sells them to people like you and I. So when you're buying a coin from a coin store, a coin dealer out here, you can almost rest assured that that coin's genuine. He's not selling you something that's phony. So I'm not suggesting that the coin dealers are the thieves, but it's these guys that are out here on Main Street with these super neat deals. Always remember this. If the deal sounds too good to be true, it probably is. If it sounds too good to be true. Now, let me suggest to you that you get a United States coin book. Now, I don't know what this is. A 59th edition of the Red Book. It's called the Official Red Book. I think it's about $15. It's published by R.S. Yeoman. And it's got all the coins. It's got the pictures of the coins in here. And it's got the dates and the strikeovers and all the mint marks. And there's other books you can buy at your local coin store that'll teach you how to grade these coins. I mean, if you're interested in coins and you like that kind of thing, and it's kind of a fun thing to do, you know, get to know what you're doing. And then, you know, for most of us, we're just collecting coins out of change anyway. You know, like my daughter is collecting these new quarters that come out, and they've got you know, the date that the state became a state, you know, like Georgia, and they get five in the series and so on. There's about 50 of these coins. There's one for each state in the union, these state coins. She's collecting those, and it's fun, and she's having a good time and so on, and she's just collecting these out of change, and it costs her 25 cents to collect the coin and put it in the little folder or put it in the little book, and she's having a great time. But as you get into this a little bit more, you get into collecting the Mercury dimes, and pretty soon you've got all the Mercury dimes except 4 or 5. Then you go to the coin store and you pay 20, 30 bucks each, and you fill in the 21 and the 31, and pretty soon all that's left is the 16D. And that 16D wears on you, and you look at your coin collection, you open your book and you look at that hole. There's this hole in your collection. And it nags on you and nags on you, this hole in your collection. You don't have them all. You've got most of them, but you don't have every single one of them. The 16D is missing. See? And that weighs on. Pretty soon, you know, you got to have one of those. Pretty soon, you got to have one. And when it comes down to where you got to buy that, buyer beware. Now, unfortunately for most collectors, these two coins have been extensively altered, and even die-struck counterfeits are known. It die-struck means that somebody actually made dies and made those coins. Brand new ones, right off the press, just like they do $100 bills. Now, among the faked coins that I've seen in recent years is the 1937D three-legged buffalo nickels, where the missing leg was buffed off, and the 1916D mercury dimes with an added D mint mark, and the 1931S Lincoln cents with altered dates, usually from the 1936S or 1937S cents, and the copper-plated 1943 cents. The last one is the easiest to detect. All you use is a magnet. The 1943 steel cents are magnetic, and the genuine 43 bronze cents are not. The other coins require both good eyesight and a good quality lens of at least 10 power. In addition, each of the genuine scarce coins has other dye features to distinguish them from the altered or the counterfeit coins. The American Numismatic Association had a booklet on these and other commonly counterfeited and altered coins, detailing the features to look for. For example, an altered 1914D penny shows traces of VDB at Lincoln's shoulder. The genuine coin does not have VDB. The 1909S VDB has a distinctive mint mark found only on coins minted from 1909 to 1915. The three-legged buffalo has several die features that differentiate it from other 1937 nickels, and this is true of the many other dates that fakers have chosen to imitate. A more recent type of fakery is switching holders. A collector showed me a General Services Administration holder with an 1884 Carson City silver dollar that he bought on eBay. The coin was indeed an 1884 Carson City dollar. However, it certainly was not in uncirculated condition. The holder had been carefully split open and a coin of lesser value inserted in place of the original. All right, let's talk about that one for a minute. I just mentioned that passing here a minute ago. Actually, the coin dealers are promoters who are advertising to you and saying, you know, buy gold now, for instance. They will be selling numismatic coins because the markup in them is so great. See, when you're dealing with your bullion coins, the 2.5 to 4% markup that a broker gets is so low that there isn't any room or time in here to counterfeit these coins. Now, when you're talking about a coin that's got several thousand dollars worth of blue sky markup in it, profit, you know, that's worth counterfeiting. And that's what they're selling to you. And so I said earlier on, I said, if it's numismatic, don't buy it. Because for most of you people out there, you're not skilled enough to deal in those. And then when you call the law school and you tell me your tale of woe, you know, I say, well, God, I'm just real sorry for you. But, you know, you got taken. Or at least you didn't make a very good buy on that. And so I have to be the guy that gives you the bad news. And, of course, you get mad at me because I'm the bearer of bad tidings. And people always hate the messenger. They hate the messenger worse than the counterfeiter or the thief. So now, in this case here, the guy bought this on eBay. And it's got the PCGS MS69. Now, this thing is sealed. And normally, when you split one of these open, you break it. So if I go to get this coin out of here, I'm going to break the case. Which is not difficult to do. Just take a knife and split it open. But when it's broken, I can see that the seal's been broken. Once the seal's been broken, I look at it and say, wait a minute. So the guy that bought that should have been looking at the case and said, hey, wait a minute, this case has been opened. And even though it says PCGS on it, MS69, he bought, you know, the case. It's got the mark on it, and he's got the 1884, but it's a lesser quality. Now, boys and girls, I showed you that a little earlier. the quality of this coin is very important, because just the difference between one grade, VF20 and EF40, one grade, can be 25% of the values of the coin. And in some cases, it can be thousands of dollars. I mean, you know, if you're talking about a 95 Morgan dollar, you know, I mean, we could be talking about one grade point over here, it could be $3,000 or $4,000. They only made 12,000 that year. Those things are very, very rare. I've never even seen one, much less held one in my grubby little paw. And so I can tell you right now that, you know, that's going to be a pretty rare coin. Anybody buying something that's rare ought not to be buying it on eBay. I'm not here to run eBay down or anybody else. I'm just telling you that when once your money's gone, it's gone. And what you got in its place is, well, did you get what you thought you were buying? Now, for those of us that are out here buying these coins, you know, we're throwing a lot of money away to start with. And then to compound the insult, after I've thrown a lot of money away to start with and then find out that what I bought wasn't what I thought I bought, is adding insult to injury. So, you know, if I'm buying an EF40, by golly, I want to know that that's an EF40, not a VF20. Even one grade point. And what they're doing is they're preying upon you people out there that are totally ignorant and don't know anything about coins, and you believe what this dealer's telling you. Let me tell you, the dealer's lying to you. That's just coming out of the chute. Whoever's selling this thing to you is lying to you. Now go from there and take a look at it and have a second or third opinion. You know, there's safety in a multitude of counsel. And if I was going to buy something and I'm a little bit concerned about it, well, good, let's take it over to Bob over here and have him grade it. You know, if three guys look at a coin and they all grade it EF40, by God, that's an EF40. If three guys that know how to grade a coin, if one of them says, I think it's a VF20, and the next guy says, oh, I think it's an EF40, that's a split in opinion. I'd say, well, I think it's a VF20, and that's what I'm going to pay. Otherwise, you better have a coin in here that's very clearly an EF40. And there is a little room, you know. But when you're talking about thousands of dollars, you know, or hundreds of dollars, tuck that one away in your heart. And remember this, in numismatic coins, there's no profits to be made, ever, 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 at any time. Just like buying stocks. There's no profit to be made in stocks, ever, ever, ever. The only exception to that is the brokers. The brokers in Wall Street make money on stocks. The buyers of the stocks don't. And if, perchance, you ever made a dollar on a stock, thank your lucky stars. If you ever make a dollar on a numismatic coin, just thank your lucky stars. Because for those of us that are coin collectors, we don't make money. We just spend a lot. But we have a lot of fun in the process. All right. So there's the story, and there's where you can get the information on these counterfeit coins. Enough said. Let me give you a final reminder, and we'll see you back here tomorrow night. And that final reminder is, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log, our schedule, and archives, and that can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. You've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. And good night, friends.